Hey gang, are you new to this podcast? Have you subscribed on iTunes or Stitcher and realized that you can only access the 20 most recent shows on these platforms? Do you want to binge on How Did I Get Here? Well, check out our archives available for free. Simply go to howdidigethere.podbean.com, look on the right-hand column, and our entire catalog is easily accessible by month and year. Check out great conversations with such guests as Quiet Company, Ian McLaughlin, Dwight Twilley, The Blue Bonnets, and many, many more. Just go to howdidigethere.podbean.com and start listening. Let's get down.
And you may ask yourself, well, how did I get here?
It's time for How Did I Get Here?
Hello, I'm Johnny. I'm your host. Welcome to the show. I have a fantastic show for you guys today. Singer-songwriter Bruce Sedano is here. He was here during South by Southwest, and I was lucky enough to get to sit down and talk to him, thanks to my friend Fiona. She wrote me, and she was like, I bet you'd like to talk to this guy, Bruce Sedano. And she sent me his bio, and I was blown away. He's got a new album out called Burbank Sessions, but let me tell you a little bit about Bruce Sedano. He started out in the late 60s with the band Alive and Kickin'. They had a hit, Tighter and Tighter. And then he started the band Brooklyn Dreams. It was like a vocal, soul, funk band. Fantastic band that ended up hooking up with Donna Summer and writing Heaven Knows and also performing it with her. And then I guess touring with her. And then he went on to marry Donna Summer. They wrote Bad Girls together. He wrote hits for Michael and Jermaine Jackson, Donna Summer, Reba McEntire. And he has this new album out called Burbank Sessions. You can find it at brucesedano.com, on iTunes, on Spotify, wherever you get music. But I suggest you go to brucesedano.com, buy the album. This guy is unbelievable, okay? So he's been doing this for a long time. He's been writing songs for a long time. He wrote the theme song for the movie Hollywood Nights. His band was in the movie American Hot Wax. I mean, the guy has been doing this stuff at a high level for a really long time, and he's out there now still making music that's relevant. How is it relevant? Well, he is making music that is honest from his heart, and it means something to him. Therefore, it's real. Therefore, it's relevant. How do you stay doing that? I don't know. He's stayed interested. He's kept his heart open. He listens. He's engaging. And he hasn't stopped making music. He's got something to say because life keeps on going on and your life just becomes richer. And a lot of people don't really stay in touch with how to express what's going on within them as they get older. But Bruce Sedano certainly has. And it was very inspiring to hear his music. And then it was extremely inspiring to sit down and talk to this masterful artist. Just a masterful, masterful artist. Great conversation with Bruce Sedano. Pick up his album, The Burbank Sessions. It's out now. Go to brucesedano.com. He's doing some shows in May, a lot of shows in like the Northeast, playing also Nashville, New York City. Go to brucesedano.com. Check out his tour dates and go see him play. The guy is unbelievable. Unbelievable. He sat down, he played my piano when he got here and sang a song. It was gorgeous. I wish I would have recorded it. I wish I would have had more time with him. He was going to play a song on the show, but unfortunately we ran out of time. But it was great to have him on here. I want to thank him and his crew, including my friend Fiona, who set this up. Great talking to a guy like Bruce Sedano. We're going to get to that in just a second. Let me tell you what's going on with me. I am running around trying to run some errands, finish up some things before I leave to Las Vegas tomorrow to play a show with Skyrocket. I'll be back on Sunday, but I'm also in this songwriting game, and I have two songs due at midnight on Sunday. I'm in two different songwriting games. So I've got to turn in two songs by midnight, so I got to get that going today too. So getting all that stuff done, getting ready to go to Vegas, I will report to you from Vegas and let you know how it goes, all right? Thank you so much for listening to the show, all of you. I want to thank Bruce Sedano for taking the time during South by Southwest and coming over here and sitting down and talking to me. We have an incredible conversation. If you're a musician, this is really like, man, sit down, listen to Obi-Wan tell you some stuff for 45 minutes. Fantastic conversation. Honored to talk to this great, great, great artist. Have a great weekend, everyone, and enjoy my conversation with Bruce Sedano. Let's get down.
a walking, but I'm not sure where I'm going. I'm a walking down these sidewalks made of stone. While well intended loved ones offer up their explanations.
He liked this band. I was like a sideman, like auxiliary player, and he liked the band. And they didn't know who he was. They just thought he was this old weird dude that
well,
would come
he,
to the show. He definitely is. But I knew exactly who he was, and so we ended up hitting it off.
Yeah.
How's your South by Southwest going?
Just got here yesterday, late afternoon. Up today, walking around the convention center, saying hi to some folks, and basically, here I am with you.
Yeah, so. I saw you. You ran into the great Tony Visconti.
Yeah,
what a great dude!
That was a happy accident.
Yeah,
yeah. I mean, you know, Fiona kind of drags you around, and you never know what's going to happen. So
yeah,
that happened. So that was nice.
Sometimes you meet Tony Visconti, and sometimes you end up some weird dude's apartment
playing piano. Exactly. And the funny thing about Tony Visconti is we're both from Brooklyn. And I never realized that he was from Brooklyn. So that was kind of a cool little thing to happen. So.
Do you get up there a lot to Brooklyn?
A few times a year.
Where do you live now?
I live in L.A.
Okay. Because you did this, it was called the Burbank Sessions. I kind of figured unless it was something else.
Yeah. We recorded in... Randy's studio.
Oh, nice.
In Burbank.
Nice.
Yeah. No, actually, we didn't. We were recorded at the rehearsal studio. That's right.
That was in Burbank, too, though.
That's in Burbank, too, yeah.
Recording in rehearsal studios is cool. There's a certain kind of... And the album sounds fantastic. I mean, it really does.
Thanks.
And it really... there's like I'm 47, and I've done this since I was 13, you did since you were a kid, and you grow up doing this, and you wonder... you see guys either fall by the wayside, feel irrelevant. Some people just keep making music from the heart, and that's what I get from you. It's like,
you're
just making your music, and you're in a different phase, but it's so honest and so real that there's nothing ridiculous about
you're doing. Exactly. You know, I mean, it's a surprise to me too. Yeah, I call it getting off the train. You know, I mean, I've seen a lot of people just get off the train.
Yeah. And you don't blame them.
No.
After a while.
No.
This is like being in a dryer.
I mean, the thing is, you have to feel creative. You have to be inspired.
Yeah.
And so, you know, life is its own journey and, you know, things happen. And when you're an artist, you respond to things that happen. And so... In doing that, it's I remain vital to myself.
Yeah,
and I remain inspired to myself. So it's not like I feel like I'm forcing myself, or I feel like I continue to be inspired, and I feel like I'm a new artist at this point in my life. You know, it's like because I'm on a different road, doing a different thing than I've ever done before. Because I've done a lot of things, but I've never been the solo artist. Going out there and just being me, you know. So
even like in the early 80s when you did it?
No, because in the early 80s, what happened was I was in Brooklyn Dreams up until 1980.
Right.
Then I recorded a solo record as me, and at the same year I got married, my wife got pregnant, and it was kind of like a false start because I immediately shut down the solo Bruce Sedano because there was no way I could maintain my family, my relationship, my wife having her career and me trying to be a solo guy at the same time. So I just cut, you know, I continued writing and producing and doing stuff like that. But this guy never got to, you know, be the guy that I am now, you know.
Yeah.
So
that's interesting. And, you know, when you talk about that time, there's when I guess the end of Brooklyn Dreams, the music shift was going against so much. You know what I mean? Like the disco sucks phase started like swinging that way.
Yeah.
And then you wrote a great song for Dolly Parton that ended up on the top of the country charts.
Yeah.
Genius, by the way. I know it probably wasn't planned, but genius.
Definitely wasn't planned. Yeah. It's all an accident. You know, I mean, most things are accidental. You know, the thing is you do what you do. You stay in the game and you keep walking down the road and you see what happens, you know. So... you know, first and foremost, Brooklyn Dreams was never meant to be a disco band. You know, we were an R&B.
Yeah, driven, I was listening to some of the songs, you know, on like some deep funk.
Yeah, yeah. And so we got, you know, because of what was going on in the moment.
Of course.
You know, so the first Brooklyn Dreams record, you know, I was always trying to do hybrids of things. So, you know, I grew up as a kid who was inspired by the Brill Building songwriters.
Yeah.
And, you know, my main band was early Rolling Stones. I mean, so like when I put bands together, I mean, that's kind of the elements that was driving me. And so Brooklyn Dreams just came into a time when disco was exploding, and our record deal got sold to Casablanca Records. And the first thing that they said to us is, you guys got to do this.
Right.
You know, and but, you know, I mean, I was always trying to do hybrid. So like there's a song on the first, you know, Brooklyn Dreams album called Street Dance, you know, so it was an element of funk, an element of rock, and an element of R&B. And so I would always try and incorporate it in, you know, I loved R&B music, but lyrically, R&B music always left me a little, it was always, you know, other than Smokey Robinson and Marvin Gaye and Stevie, yeah, you know, it was a little, always became cliched, you know, so I was always more attracted to, you know, on their lyrical side of a Jackson Browne and all that. And so I was always kind of trying to a hybrid stuff. And subsequently what happens is when you do that is that people never know what category to put you in.
Right.
You know, so you're not quite R&B, you're not quite pop, you're not quite this. So it's not necessarily a good thing to do. But
no.
so that's why even what I'm doing now is like, it's like Cindy, my manager, is kind of like encouraging me to streamline it down to even more of just me and Randy, because even in what we do now, there's jazz elements and rock elements and
well, that's what I like, is that there's a minor seventh and major seventh thing you're not scared to do in that G, C, D world.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Exactly. I can't help myself.
Of course not.
So,
You know the language. Why deny the knowledge?
Yeah. Yes,
you know?
Exactly. So
it's like a guy that like went to classical music school, and when punk rock came around, he just pretended he never knew all that stuff.
Yeah.
You know?
Exactly.
Yeah. All right. So there's elements in these songs that I feel like, again, like with those chords and stuff, that I feel like you've picked up this stuff along the way, and I'm drawing a blank on the song that's on the Burbank Sessions. I think it's like the fourth or fifth song.
Yeah, I don't know myself.
I'm trying to do this without notes. But there's great harmony vocals that to me...
No, that's a ballad.
What, sorry? It's a ballad. It's a little more tempo. But it has great backing vocals. But it reminded me of what you might have cemented into your knowledge base when you were doing Brooklyn Dreams. And probably growing up on doo-wop and stuff like that. Did that speak to you?
Well, doo-wop was actually, you know, I caught the tail end.
Okay.
Caught the tail end of it, but I was around it a lot and I heard it a lot, and later on I kind of circled around because, you know, as a kid, even preteen, my first exposure to music was going to shows at the Brooklyn Paramount and the Brooklyn Fox.
Yeah.
And they were a combination of doo-wop and Chuck Berry and Jerry Lee Lewis. And, you know, it was just a hybrid shows.
Right.
So, you know, as a 9-year-old and 10-year-old, my parents didn't take me to Broadway. They took me to these rock and roll shows.
Cool parents.
So subsequently, in the late 70s, I got to be part of this movie called American Hot Wax.
Right, right.
Where the Brooklyn Dreams and a friend of mine, Kenny Vance, formed this group called the Planetones for the movie.
Right.
And that was a doo-wop group.
Right.
Later on in the 90s, Kenny started the Planetones up again, and I happened to be living in Connecticut, and so I hooked in with him for that for a couple of years. But doo-wop was never really what I did. You know, it was, you know, I was after that, really.
Okay.
Yeah.
When you started out, you started on accordion?
Yes.
And then, like, the accordion isn't something you ask for as a kid, is it?
No.
No, you know, no, it's given to you.
You know, I was this, you know, Italian-American kid whose grandfather came went to visit Italy and brought me back an accordion. And but you know, it became my entry into the world of music, because I you know, got hired to play an accordion at, you know, I don't remember if it was a bar mitzvah or a sweet 16 or whatever, but at, you know, as a 12-year-old, you know, I got paid, and I was like, okay, you know, and when you're, you know, in a little middle-class family in Brooklyn, and you can make $25 for playing for a few hours, it was a good deal, you know.
Yeah, that's great.
So, yeah. So
then when did you join Alive and Kickin', or did you start that band?
I formed Alive.
You formed it. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And
that was a really cool band too. I'd never heard of you guys until I was listening to it today.
Yeah, it was an evolution, you know, one of those things where, you know, you have one name and then you fire the drummer and then you change your name.
Right.
And so, you know, Brooklyn Dreams, I mean, Alive and Kickin' basically started 1966, 67, something like that. And, you know, we became this club band that would play, you know, played. We would have like 2 and 3 week residencies at these clubs in Manhattan.
Yeah.
And that's what we were doing. And so I would go to high school, and at night I would be playing these clubs. And then ultimately producers started coming around, and you know, then finally, up until that point, you know, in those days you couldn't get into a recording studio. It was like,
right,
it was expensive and it was hard to do. And if you got in, you know, it was like at 4 o'clock in the morning in between, you know.
Yeah.
That was kind of how it went in those days. So.
When did you have something... Like, did you have one of the first 4 tracks and stuff ever? Like, home stuff? Like, when did you start having home stuff?
Yeah, late 60s, I had a Revox, you know, just a 2-track, you know, tape recorder.
Okay.
Reel-to-reel tape recorder. And then, you know, then I went to a TIAC 4-track, and then I don't remember what the 8-track was, but it evolved to 8-track. And then by 1981, I built my first recording studio, and I had a studio. I had this ranch out in Thousand Oaks, California, and I converted the barn into a studio, and I did it a couple of times. So, in fact, my daughter and son-in-law are in a group called Johnny Swim, and I had all this great gear stashed in Nashville, and so he recently went to Nashville, shipped everything out to LA, and is building a studio using all my, I have like all these great, you know, compressors and Neve modules.
Oh, dude, I bet that's amazing.
Yeah, so he's like, and I'm really happy that, you know, he's using it, because I can get to use it again now too, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So have you ever recorded on like your own record on your own?
Like, yeah, I did, there's 2 albums ago, it's called, CD is called Life in the Romantic, and basically I did it all myself at my house in Nashville, I emailed a couple of tracks to Randy out in LA, he overdubbed some guitars and stuff like that, but basically I did the whole record myself.
Yeah. Oh, that's cool.
And actually my first record, Rainy Day Soul, I basically did myself as well. Yeah.
What does Randy bring to the table? Like when you're making...
Randy frees me...
To perform.
He just frees me to be me, and I don't have to think about a whole, you know, lot else. You know, I can just sing the song, put it down. We talk about, you know, what we want it to be, what the overdubs might be. Maybe I'll add a keyboard or whatever, but then I can just leave it to Randy and he can tweak and play and overdub. And I can have the confidence of knowing that I don't have to sit on his shoulder and micromanage everything, because
right,
he interprets me really well and knows what I want.
That's amazing. Yeah. How? When did you start producing?
I started producing in the 70s,
yeah,
you know, in the early 70s. after I got out of Alive and Kicking. When I was in Alive and Kicking, Tommy James was our producer.
Right.
So he was basically the first guy that actually took me into the studio. So he was really my mentor.
How did you meet him?
I met him. The band was playing at a club in Manhattan.
Okay.
Called the Cheetah. It was like the hottest club in Manhattan back in those days. It was on like 52nd Street, right off 8th Avenue. Yeah. We were the house band. He basically lived on 8th Avenue and 54th Street. Caught us one night. And then in between sets, I would go up to his apartment and we would write songs. I would go do that on my break. And then at that time, he was doing like Crystal Blue Persuasion and Crimson and Clover and all those things. And the recording studio, Allegro, was on Broadway and 51st Street, which is where he recorded. So, you know, I would go there, do background sessions, and just watch him and
learn.
Yeah. You know, and so that's how I started learning how to make records, and from there, you know, started producing on my own.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And then you
great.
Got to go on and work with guys like Giorgio.
Yeah.
I bet that was an amazing.
Well,
thing.
Giorgio was a completely different experience, you know, because I met Giorgio in 1977. And, you know, I came out of a school where my consciousness was not to emulate. It was to, you know, it was to find your own sound.
Yeah.
That was the consciousness that I always created under. You know, not that you would draw from influences, but you really wouldn't seek to emulate. The thing that shocked me about going into a Giorgio session would be that he would have a stack of, you know, the current hit albums.
Right.
And, you know, and he would have a team of guys and they would put on, you know, a song and say, okay, let's cop this. And they would cop that. And they had the ability. See, I don't have this ability. I'm not just speaking disparagingly. It's its own art, you know, to where you can emulate something or pull from something and take that and actually create something similar but equally cool. And you know, it doesn't feel like it's a cop. You know, when I try to do something like that, I completely suck at it. It sounds like, you know, I'm not writing a good song, and it's very obvious to what I'm trying to emulate. And so it doesn't work for me. But I was completely surprised that people actually work like that, you know.
It's interesting, though, because to me, I guess I'm thinking more on a soundtrack level. His stuff is so significant, especially like the it's like American Gigolo and like Scarface.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they had synthesizers.
Yeah, once he hit that groove, he was...
Yeah,
but
you're talking about back in the 70s and the dance days.
Yeah, yeah, and just like, I mean, how he would create a pop song, you know, I mean, he always says to me, Bruce, you should be more commercial. And he's probably right, but it's just not my strength. So, I mean, the thing that I've learned is you stay in your own lane, you be true to who you are, and you walk your own path, and you keep your blinders on, and I would get in trouble creatively, periods of time in my career where I would get frustrated, and I would try to do what I call chasing it.
Yeah.
You know, so you say, okay, this is what's happening now. Well, I you know, because you want to be successful and you want to be successful and you want to be contemporary and but it never worked for me. You know, well, like you talk about a song like Starting Over Again, that was basically me writing a Bruce song, my wife saying, you know, I mean, her whole mission, how that song became a Dolly Parton song was that my parents were getting divorced. I write this song, Starting Over Again. My wife is going to appear on the Johnny Carson show. She says to me, I'm going to sing this song because maybe when your parents hear this song on TV, it'll give them a reason to stay together. And I'm like, that's really sweet of you, honey, but there's no way my parents are going to stay together. She said, well, I'm going to try anyway. So she goes on the Johnny Carson show. She sings Starting Over Again. You know, Dolly Parton's people hear the song. The next day they're calling to get the song, and my parents still get divorced. So that's kind of how stuff happens, you know.
Yeah.
So
that's interesting. I grew up a huge fan of of Donna Summer.
Yeah.
And Heaven Knows is my favorite song. Also, the drummer in my band, Darren, it's his favorite song. He wanted me to tell you that.
Okay.
It's our favorite Donna Summer song.
Okay? Great.
And I listened to a Terry Gross interview after she passed away on Fresh Air that made me think that she was that kind of person that even though she's going on The Tonight Show and probably has something that her label and management are like, hey, man, you got to promote this new thing. She's like, no, Bruce's parents are getting divorced, and maybe we can put a stop to this. What an amazing person.
Yeah, that's exactly who she was, you know, and she was the most amazing person. You know, I've met many super talented, incredible people, but I've never met anybody like Donna. As a great singer, great entertainer, great writer, great human being, extremely generous, and completely unaffected by her impact and who she was, and the most human person.
That's good.
You know, yeah.
You seem like that too, and that comes out a lot in your music. Yeah.
Thank
it really does.
There's an
honesty and truth that's very, very beautiful and appealing in your music.
Yeah, I appreciate that, and I would want that to be what people take away from it. So good.
Can I ask you this? What do you listen to what's happening now? Like, have you listened to electronic dance music and stuff like that?
Yeah, sure.
Do you like it?
It's a funny situation for me because for years, you know, I was trapped in the backlash of that whole genre,
sure.
You know, and, you know, although, and I would always argue with people, you know, because I would say, you know, look, there's, you know, you may not like it, but there's a certain musicality in this music that's very valid. And I mean, when I was a kid, as a songwriter, I dreamed of being able to have a song where I could put strings on a song.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that was like, oh, man, if I could get strings on a song, that would be so cool.
Sure.
You know, and so when I got the opportunity to, you know, write songs that, you know, for the Brooklyn Dreams, where I was still writing songs that were saying things lyrically. Had cool rhythms, and at the same time I could incorporate a cool string chart and a horn chart, I'm like, that's musically valid. And just because it's not, you know, a 12-bar blues or a three-chord hard-driving punk song doesn't diminish the musicality of it.
Right.
So there were years that I would have these debates with people. Now, the thing that surprises me and makes me laugh about EDM is how little EDM has evolved from what we were doing back then. You know, it's very similar. I mean, it's evolved somewhat, but it's so reminiscent of everything that began back with I Feel Love, in a sense, you know.
It must have been a culture, because since I was a kid then, I was hearing the music, but I wasn't in the clubs and living the life.
Yeah.
And now I'm kind of too old to really be in the EDM clubs and living the life, but I still hear the music.
Yeah.
But there's, to me, there's an absence of humanity in it, and kind of also an absence of song. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
Like,
well,
even then,
course.
Into the dance music of the 80s with like New Order and all these kind of like English dance bands and stuff, they still had great songs.
Right.
And these, there's no actual song. They're like weird sounds. It still has a four on the floor.
Yeah, yeah.
But
There's no song. Yeah, no. I mean, no. They've deconstructed the song. You know, recently, about a year and a half ago, we did a Donna Summer remix album.
Uh-huh.
You know, we got some of the younger, hotter remixers to rework some of these songs. And, they totally deconstructed the songs, and you know, there was a big backlash to me for allowing this to happen from Donna Summer fans. And you know, I mean, and I their point was well taken. I mean, I understand the point, but my point was, look, we have the original songs. This is just a contemporary twist on what younger people now would do to it. So it in no way was meant to dishonor the original. It's just trying to introduce the music and to a newer audience.
Yeah.
And also get a contemporary twist on it. But yeah. They totally deconstructed it and yeah.
I guess I also have an affinity for that time because it was a huge group of people making that sound. It took string players. It took a drummer. It took a percussionist. It took the flute guy.
Yeah.
And now you don't need that. And there's some kind of humanity in those records, even though they are four on the floor and whatever they were labeled as. There is a big humanity to those records.
Without a doubt. Yeah. You know, you have a picture of Skunk Baxter, you know. Skunk is a great guitarist, and he was the guitarist on Hot Stuff. He played the there were great musicians. Keith Forsey was the drummer,
that's another guy I've gotten to hang out with. So.
Yeah, yeah, Keith's great.
Yeah,
so.
Do you still see Keith and Skunk? Like, do you?
Skunk. I bump into him in airports. Is kind of how we see each other, and. Probably the last time I saw him was about a year ago at the airport in Nashville, and I was leaving and he was coming in, and Keith I see from time to time. Giorgio and I are neighbors in LA, and we'll have lunch once every few weeks when we're in town, and every now and then we bump into Keith. Keith spends a lot of time in his boat in Mexico these days.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
Did you make tape loops? For drums and stuff back then?
Back in the day, sure. Yeah.
I wish I could go back there.
Everything was a drum loop, that was the foundation of writing a lot of songs, and it was also the foundation of recording a lot of songs.
You don't go back to that much now?
It's
very organic, your sound.
Yeah, I'm in a completely different place. I mean, as I go on, I break it down more and more to the truth, and I'm a lyric driven artist, for me it's really about what I'm trying to say and how I'm trying to say it, and the more forward I go, less is more becomes even a more basic thing. I could actually see myself doing a spoken word record at some point. Breaking it down to the simplicity and the soul of what it is,
There's an ease and there's an ease to the way the way your songs go that can really, it's the reflection, it's like honest confidence based on experience and being able to calmly go into songs. You know what I mean? Like, your songs breathe.
Yeah.
You're not rushing to get anywhere. You're not trying to stick anything down anyone's throat.
I'm trying to be the best Bruce that I can be. I'm trying to be the most honest Bruce I can be. I'm trying to share my truth as I know it and as I discover it.
Yeah.
And as I go through experiences of, as humans, we all go through very similar circumstances. So, as I go through things, my way of interpreting it, my understanding of that situation, as I put it into a song, as other people relate to that, that's what the goal is. For me, it's about leaving a legacy of honesty and truth. And that's really what my goal is. Not so much, I'm not trying to have a hit record or be on the top of the charts or that. I'm just trying to be the best Bruce I can be. And as I become a solo performer, this for me is the most fun because it is a completely new experience. So I'm getting to flex a new muscle, develop a new realm. I'm not part of a band. I now have to be the guy that speaks. I was always the guy that wanted to be in the background. Yeah. I always had other guys who could sing, other guys who could speak. Yeah. So now I'm having fun doing something that I never did before. So it's still challenging for me in that way. So as an artist, you have to continue to challenge yourself. That's part of the deal that keeps you alive. So
I just want to know, can you share with me, because this is the thing, is I mean, I'm younger than you, but as you age in this business, you don't, and nothing against Rod Stewart, that guy's been great his whole life and sure has, and yeah. whatever. But yeah. when you go to like the American Songbook Volume 5 or whatever,
right.
kind of have let go of something, and that's that inspiration and, and need to say something.
Yes. No, that's exactly right. And that's what I started saying earlier is that, you know, for me, I haven't reached that point. I'm still inspired.
I don't think you will.
You know, I don't know. You know, I don't know, you know. I hope not. But and hopefully if I got to that point, I would stop, you know, because I don't want to do it you know, I have to feel like I'm inspired because that's, as an artist, that's what drives you, you know. And you know, at this point, you know, I would have to be inspired and I have to be motivated and I have to enjoy what I'm doing. So
you're inspired and motivated to be writing records and putting them out. Yeah.
And you have to keep living. That's the thing, you know.
That's true.
And so... You know, I mean, you know, I know a lot of people who are my age or older than me who have gotten to that place where they're just kind of like, you know, riding the luxury of whatever they've accomplished. And look, they deserve it. They've worked hard and long to get to where they are. I'm just not in that place. And it's not, I don't think it's my calling to do that. So, you know.
Do you have any like... Do you have like a songwriting schedule? Like, do you get up and write every day? Do you journal? Do you do something?
No, you know, the other thing is, you know, most of my successful songs have been co-writes. So I'll start by saying that. But I personally don't feel my best songs are songs that I co-write.
Right.
Because I tend to compromise in ways that I'm not comfortable with when I'm in a co-writing session. So I lived in Nashville for a number of years and I tried to do that whole scheduling of writing, you know, a couple of sessions a day and everybody gets together and who's got an idea and you crank them out and it's just not satisfying to me. And so I would always leave these things feeling like, okay, we wrote a song, but you know, that line over there could be better. And I tried to fight to defend
Let's improve that line.
And I got overruled. So, okay. So, look, you know, again, I'm in a place in my life where I don't have to do that.
Right.
And so I have the luxury of, you know, just being able to create what I want to create. And it doesn't mean I won't go right ever or that kind of situation. But, you know,
Is there any dream co-writer?
Is there
like a Paul Simon or something like that? Like, I'd love to write a song with Paul McCartney.
I would love to write a song with Paul Simon, but I would probably be so nervous that I would probably shut myself down.
Yeah.
Because I can become that little timid little guy too. If I could get with somebody like Paul Simon and, you know, get to a place where we were comfortable together, maybe I would be free enough to do that. You know, would I love to write a song with Bob Dylan? Sure.
Yeah.
Who wouldn't, you know, but it's not something I think about because it's not something that I ever think is in the realm of possibility, but you know.
Not many people have gotten to do that one.
No. Where's the guy from, somebody from, I don't know if it was Procol, huh? There was some. He did co-write one record, you know, back in the 90s or something. But
yeah, I know he did one in the 80s. He did a song with Tom Petty. They wrote a song together.
Yeah, well, but, maybe with the Traveling Wilburys or something. I don't know, but yeah.
Your band now that you play with, are they here with you, or is it just you and Randy?
Just me and Randy. Okay. We're doing the duo thing, and we do a lot of that these days because the other thing is that, in my quest to be a solo performer, as many opportunities as I can get to perform live, I'm into doing it. And most situations, you know, so, and I learned this from my daughter and Johnny Swim. They will work in any configuration imaginable, because you want as many opportunities as you can.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm about. You know, Randy and I, you know, did a European tour in the fall, and it was great, you know, and it makes me flex a lot of muscles because I can't rely or hide behind the band, you know. So
yeah, your voice sounds great. You know,
it's getting better.
Yeah. How does that happen?
I don't know, but I'm not questioning it. I'm just oh, okay, keep working those muscles, Bruce.
Yeah.
You know.
Do you guys want to play a song? We have to go. Do you guys have to go? Oh, that's totally okay.
We have to go.
Sorry, I didn't mean to. I was mesmerized by the great Bruce Sudano.
Yeah, I would love to, but I know the girls are like looking at me like.
Well, dude, I just want to get it. Thank you so much.
Thank you,
okay.
John. Appreciate it. Nice to meet you, man.
Yeah, the Burbank Sessions. Everyone, get out there and get it. BruceSudano.com.
Right. Someone running from the very end. With my laces tight as they could take.
Dude, that guy is awesome. Awesome. Bruce Sudano. Check him out at BruceSudano.com. Pick up his album, Burbank Sessions. It's now available. He's out there. He's on Twitter. He's on Instagram. He's on Facebook. He's on tour. I think he's on tour. I saw he's doing some shows with the Zombies. So go to BruceSudano.com and check it out, doing more shows. He actually toured with them like last year. The guy's great. Unbelievable. He's like, it's like for me as a musician and as a songwriter, being younger than he is, I felt like I was talking to Yoda or fucking Obi-Wan. Jesus, thank you, Bruce, for coming to the show. This is fantastic. Since I first heard Heaven Knows, this guy's music has touched me. So I want to thank him for coming over to my apartment, playing my piano, talking to me, and I wish him great luck. I hope that we get to sit down and talk again. Fabulous dude, Bruce Sudano. Get out there, check him out. Hey, while you're out there looking up Bruce Sudano, don't forget that you can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes or Stitcher or anywhere you listen to podcasts. I'm going to start saying it like that. Hey, so what do you do? I'm a musician. I'm in the band Skyrocket. I write songs. I also have a podcast. It's called How Did I Get Here? All right, hey, everyone, have a great weekend. I'm going to Las Vegas. Enjoy some more music from Bruce Sudano. The man is unbelievable. Get to BruceSudano.com. Find out if he's coming to a town near you and pick up his album, The Burbank Sessions. All right, have a great weekend. Let's get down.
On the wall, that's a ticket. There's a pot on the boil in the kitchen. There's a woman down the hall, gonna miss it. This is your one beautiful life. There's a knock on the door, you gotta answer.
Everybody needs a little more. They're gonna ask you if you wanna get ahead, move a little faster. This is your one beautiful life. There's a sun in the sky above you. Somebody laying in the bed gonna love you. There's a place you gotta go on the road to. This is your one beautiful life. This is your one beautiful life. Live it up, get it right. You don't get the chance to go around twice. It's all about love. This is your one beautiful life. Somebody got a bun cooking in the oven. Somebody that you know needs a bit of loving. People dying every day, ain't that something? This is your one beautiful life. This is your one beautiful life. Live it up, get it right. You don't get the chance to go around twice. It's all about love. This is your one beautiful life. Live every moment of every day. Find a little bit of truth along the way. Don't give up on your dreams cause you're too afraid. See the end, it's all just gonna fade.
This is your one beautiful life.